is Christian Questions.
Somebody once said, be yourself. Everyone else is taken. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Christian Questions, Talk Radio with a Purpose with Jonathan and Rick. This isn't your typical Christian commentary. We love talking with our audience, and we promise to never talk at you like so many talk shows do today. This is a conversation about biblical topics as we look at them from a different perspective.
And Rick, that perspective is based on godly principles, family values, honest dialogue, all in a politically free zone.
Jonathan, the best part is this. We talk and you listen, and then you talk and we listen.
And you can also contact us at our website, ChristianQuestions.net.
I'm Rick.
And I'm Jonathan.
And we're glad you've chosen to spend some time with us on this fine Sunday morning. And Jonathan, what is our topic today?
Well, Rick, our question is, did God create or did we evolve?
Ooh-hoo.
And we have a special guest, David Stein, with us. Our theme text comes from Isaiah 45, verse 18. For thus says the Lord, who created the heavens, he is the God who formed the earth and made it. He established it and did not create it a waste place, but formed it to be inhabited.
Well, if you follow that scripture, that answers the question. End of conversation. We're done. However, though, we have a lot to talk about because since the introduction of the philosophy of evolution by Charles Darwin in 1859, there has been a raging debate on the origin of life. Darwinian evolution has become entrenched both as a scientific and social precept. Those who subscribe to the belief that God designed and created this universe are painted as superstitious deniers of reality. And that's pretty strong language. Even more concerning, radical scientists are advocating social restrictions on Christians in particular to prevent their delusion from spreading to others, even their own children. Is there a reason to believe what used to be accepted by most scientists, that God really did create our world? Are Christians out of touch with reality? Did God create or did we evolve? Boy, is that loaded.
Yes, it is, Rick.
And to tackle such a subject, Jonathan, as you mentioned, we do have a special guest with us, David Stein. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Rick. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning.
It is good to have you here with us.
It's great to be here once again.
And yeah, you've been here several times over the years with us on several different subjects of prophecy and science and so forth.
Yes, indeed.
And give us just a real quick background on, why would I ask you to do a subject like this besides the fact that I don't know much about it?
Well, that's a good question. It is a very interesting subject, and an interesting subject that I've been looking at for a long time. Now, my background is not in science, although I've got a degree, a bachelor of science degree in electrical engineering. Nevertheless, this has been a very personal study and pursuit of mine because I am a Christian. I am a follower of Jesus Christ, and I see what is happening in the world today in terms of the battle against Christianity, and evolution is one of these fronts. So I spent a great deal of time reading scientific journals and books on both sides of the argument, and that's where my interest has come from.
All right, and you are a minister?
I am. I'm a pastor in the Allentown Bible Students Ecclesia.
Okay, so you're from Pennsylvania, you have family up here, so you've actually come up to Connecticut to sit in our studios with us.
Yes, indeed.
Well, thanks for being with us. We're looking forward to your contributions this morning. And folks, we're going to get right into this conversation. I'm going to give you the phone number now. We're going to want to lay a little bit of groundwork, but take this number, because if you want to participate, you call us at 866-985-4255, toll free, 866-985-4ALL. We are live Sunday mornings from seven to mime. So you're on the radio, you got to be a mime. You know?
Yeah.
It doesn't work. That means it's 7 to 9. That means you're on right now.
And our website is ChristianQuestions.net.
You know, he said he had a bachelor of science degree.
Mm-hmm.
I was once a bachelor. Does that count?
But you gave it up.
I did. I gave it up for much better life 32 years ago. All right, let's get started. What does the Bible say about this question of did God create or did we evolve? Jonathan, let's start with the scripture.
Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.
So that's the first scripture of the Bible. David, what about it?
Well, it's pretty clear, isn't it? It's unambiguous. The text simply says God created the heavens and the earth. Now, in the book of Genesis, in that first chapter, we have a lot more information given, but it's all very top level. We have to understand the Bible was never intended to be a textbook of science. Nevertheless, we value true science, and we would expect that the truth that we find from the Bible will be reflected in the truth of science.
Okay, so with that said, I want to play a soundbite for you, David, and I'm playing it as much for you as we are for the audience. And as we play this soundbite, my question to you is, do you fit into the following characterization that this individual, we found this on YouTube, it was a program on evolution versus creation, and basically the subheading was listen to the scientists. So you can kind of get a sense for where it's coming from. But they characterize creationists. So let's listen, and then David, the question right after we're done is, does this describe you as a creationist? Let's listen.
The current controversy of evolution versus creationism is one in which you have a segment of the American population who, for religious reasons, has never been able to accommodate modern science and even most aspects of the modern world. They reject specifically evolution. And they are really trying to work the country back, to bring the country back to what they regard as its properly religious foundation. So they're using politics to advance what is essentially a religious goal. That is the heart of the evolution versus creationism issue.
Okay, so she says the heart of the creation versus evolution issue is we as creationists do not and will not accommodate modern science, but we want to bring the country back. Do you fit into that category?
No, I don't. I have no doubt that there's a few religious people out there that might fit into this person's characterization. But her statement characterizing the debate is manifestly wrong, and it's an attempt to frame the controversy favorably on her side. I am, first and foremost, a follower of Jesus Christ. But in this time of advancing scientific knowledge, it's not necessary for me to rely simply upon the Bible's testimony of the subject. There is such cutting-edge science going on right now that calls into question much of the theory of evolution.
So wait. Science calls into question?
Oh, absolutely.
The theory of evolution?
Absolutely.
Okay, wait. So science calls into question the theory of evolution?
Yes.
All right. No, look, this is important because it is accepted as factual and just sort of gone, people go along with it. And if you're saying that science calls into question, we need to understand, well, what is it? And we're going to be going over those things.
Yeah. Well, here's the reality, Rick, that there are credentialed scientists in the field of microbiology, physics, mathematics, and chemistry who are skeptical about the claims of neo-Darwinian evolution. And their skepticism isn't based, as this woman said, upon preconceived beliefs from the scriptures. Their skepticism is based upon the evidence that they are seeing in science.
Okay, folks, hold on to your hats. We're going to get into a lot of these things. If you have a thought, it's 866-985-4255. Toll free, 866-985-4ALL. We are live Sunday mornings from 7 to 9, and that means we're on right now.
And our website, christianquestions.net. Rick, I have a statement. I was wondering if David falls in line with this statement. We embrace science to prove creation.
Yes? No?
Yes.
Absolutely?
Yes.
All right. Very good. All right. So let's start with that. If you're going to embrace science to prove creation, then let's go right to the scriptures, and we got to do this somewhat quickly. But what about the creative days? It says God created the world in 6 days.
Well, just like there's spin in politics, there is interpretation in the Bible. One of the problems that I perceive of how the Christianity is perceived by evolutionists is that there are many Christians that in all sincerity believe that the days of creation were 24 hours long. And of course, that is what evolutionists will grab onto to find great criticism of creationists. But when you look at the Bible, you see that the word for day, in the Hebrew, it's the word yom, really has a much larger scope of meaning than just restricting it to 24 hours.
Okay, hold that thought for a minute. What I want to do is, because creationism, just like people on the side of science, has a lot of different perspectives, I want to recognize that there are some creationists that have that sense of 6 24-hour days. As a matter of fact, there is a museum in Kentucky that was opened in 2005, the Creation Museum, that adheres to that thinking. I want to play a quick soundbite from a BBC report on the Creationist Museum and just giving some sense of that, and then we're going to want to respond to that along with a scriptural look at what you're talking about creative days. So let's listen to this.
Perhaps the most startling display shows children playing next to dinosaurs, something mainstream science says is impossible as they died out millions of years before humans.
And you believe that these dinosaurs were quite friendly dinosaurs, that they actually played with children or you know, could have done?
Yeah, there are all sorts of different dinosaurs, carnivores as well as omnivores. Many of them were quite peaceful, quite docile.
So they could have been children with dinosaur pets?
Yes.
Okay, so they're obviously adhering to a 6-24-hour day approach.
Yes.
And you're saying the word for day doesn't have to mean 24-hour day.
Well, you can see that if you interpret it as 24-hour day, you come up with these type of creationist presentations.
Right.
And it's done in all sincerity. People sincerely believe this. But when you look at that Bible word for day, you find that, again, it means a definite period, but not the specificity of that duration is not given. For example, in Genesis chapter 2, verse 4.
In the day that the Lord God made the earth and the heaven.
So that is talking about a day that the Lord God made the heaven and the earth.
Yeah, notice that. In the day.
Right.
Singular. When
right.
He made the heavens and the earth. So there's the use of that word day in Scripture to encompass all six days plus verse 1, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth.
So in Genesis chapter 1, it labels six different days. And then in Genesis chapter 2, it's summing up those six different days by saying in that day.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we use the same thing in English today. How many times have you heard, in my grandfather's day?
Right, exactly.
What did that mean? It means a large period of time, not a 24-hour period of time.
And Jonathan, there's a couple of other scriptures that give us a sense that a day in Scripture does not have to mean 24 hours, just parts of the Scriptures.
With the Lord, one day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years like one day.
And that's 2 Peter 3:8, and then Matthew 10:15, what does it talk about?
In the day of judgment.
We have some scriptures that give us a real sense that day is much bigger than just 24 hours. It's a marker for a time period, a beginning and an end sort of thing.
Yes.
All right, and that's important. Before we go to the phones, David, I want to ask you then, what would you say is a key reason, sitting in your seat, what is the key reason to believe in creation? Now, obviously, we're going to go through scientific proof, but what's the key reason for you?
Well, you noticed that earlier I said, I am a follower of Jesus Christ. To me, the key reason for believing in creation that trumps everything else is the fact that Jesus died for us. This is the doctrine of atonement, where he died to atone for the sin of Adam.
So he died atonement to make it right.
That's right.
Okay.
If you don't believe in Adam, or if you think that Adam was some series of apes that came up, then the whole doctrine of atonement, the whole doctrine of Jesus dying for the salvation of man, gets thrown out the window.
Okay, and you know, it's interesting. Jesus, we're going to get to the phone in a minute. Jesus believed in the creation. If you look at Matthew 19, it says that. The Apostle Paul believed in creation. If you look at 1 Corinthians 15:45, it says that. So we have them adhering to the creationist story as fact, not fiction.
Yes, if Jesus said that Adam and Eve were real, that God created them, you just can't throw that out.
Okay. Fred, let's quick go to the phones here. Jonathan, who
All
do
right.
we have?
We have Steve from Virginia. Welcome to Christian Questions, Steve.
Hi, guys. I listen to you about every Sunday on my way home from work.
Okay, good.
And I don't know a whole lot about the Bible. I'll get that out of the way because, the Bible, isn't it based on a 10,000-year time frame or somewhere like that?
Well, the Bible is, David, the Bible is based on the time frame of the existence of man.
Yes, that's correct.
Which is about 6,000 years plus.
Yeah, there.
Okay, well,
go ahead, Steve.
What I don't understand is, I mean, you know, that's based on like a 6,000-year, but how do you cross-reference that between, like, you know, the dinosaurs, supposedly go back millions of years.
Okay, all right, Dave. Steve. Actually, that's an excellent question. We are at the end of this segment, so we're going to have to let you go. But we're going to address that question as soon as we come back in for our next segment.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks so much for calling, Steve. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right. So what we have here, just to sum up quickly, we've looked at a creative day being a creative period of time. We looked at our approach is that science actually enhances the creation account in the scriptures, and that there are questions about evolution. So, folks, that's what we're starting with. Obviously, there's much, much, much more to come. You don't want to go away.
This is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan here with Rick, with our special guest, David Stein, and our subject, Did God Create or Did We Evolve? Did you know there are three questions evolution cannot answer? What are they? That's next.
You're listening to Christian Questions.
Welcome back. This is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan, here with Rick, with our special guest David Stein. Our subject this morning, did God create or did we evolve? To be a part of our program, call toll-free 866-985-4255. That's 866-985-4ALL. We're live Sunday mornings from 7 to 9. That means we're on right now. And our website, ChristianQuestions.net.
And Jonathan, one of the challenges we have this morning is this subject is so large and so comprehensive. There's a lot of things we're not able to say.
We're skipping over everything.
Yeah. So Julie is our chief rewinder. Make sure that the all of the pieces of the outline that we use that we just skipped get put into CQ Rewind. And Jonathan, people can get that at ChristianQuestions.net.
That's right. And the bonus material is amazing on this subject.
So you want CQ Rewind, you want to sign up for the full edition. It's a free service. It's an email that comes to you once a week with a PDF file attachment. And it has the outline, some of all of the scriptures that we use, all of them that we use, plus many, many, many more. And it gives you graphics and illustrations to look at. And again, it's a free service.
And you can only get it at ChristianQuestions.net.
Sign up for CQ Rewind, the full edition, free of charge, no obligation. All right, let's get back to it. Steve from Virginia had a question about, okay, you know, the Bible is really based on the 6,000 years of the history of mankind. Well, dinosaurs don't fit in that 6,000 years. So how does that fit? How would you give him an answer to that?
Yeah, the way that I would answer, our view is that dinosaurs and man did not live concurrently together. I mean, I know that there's some Christian creationists that feel that way, but we don't really see it. The length of the creative days, of course, is another area where Bible students have different views. There are some that feel that it's 7,000 years long. There are some that feel that it's longer than that. Also, another area is, were all the creative days the same length? Again, going back to the meaning of the word day, they don't have to be.
Right.
They simply specify something that happened in the preparation of the earth during that creative day. And how long it is, well, it's a matter of speculation.
So when we look at the ticking of the clock of the Bible, it gives sort of an introduction, if you will, as far as creation. But the clock actually starts ticking at the creation of man.
Yes, yes.
So you have all those other things before the clock starts to tick.
Exactly right. Okay. All of those previous days were preparation for man to come up on the earth. And so, in fact, when scientists go back and look at how the earth developed, you can find a lot of synchronicity with the Bible's description in the 5 days leading up to the creation of man with what we understand that happened on the earth through science.
Synchronicity. Did you know that was a word?
I did not.
All right, David. David Stein is our special guest here this morning. He is coming in to help us discuss this very important, very fascinating subject of evolution and creation. Is evolution an established scientific fact?
You ask an evolutionist, he would say yes.
Yeah, and a creationist would say
no.
All right, then. All right, so there's a serious difference of opinion on Darwinian evolution. So first of all, give us the definition. What is Darwinian evolution?
Well, one working definition would be it's the philosophy of change over time put forward by Charles Darwin, citing natural selection as the force of change and biologic mutations as the source of new biological characteristics. Now, I should say, that's the neo-Darwinian definition. Darwin knew nothing about DNA. That was something that came long after him. He didn't know where the source of change was. Most of his book was written on how natural selection works. And natural selection is a law of biology. It really does work. It produces changes over time. But Darwin suggested these changes go from one species into another. In other words, from a bear into a whale or what have you. That's where creationists have a problem. We don't have a problem with natural selection.
Okay, and so that's interesting, and folks, hopefully you're understanding that. If you have a thought, it's 866-985-4255, toll-free, 866-985-4ALL. We are live Sunday mornings from 7 to 9, and that means we're on right now.
And if you have any questions on our subject, ask your questions at ChristianQuestions.net or go to Facebook or email us at rick@ChristianQuestions.net.
Lots of ways to contact us. And Jonathan, at the end of the last segment, you said there are three things that evolutionists cannot prove or understand or something.
Or answer.
Answer, that was that.
Yes.
Remember the word. All right, and the first one, David, is the origin of life, okay? What about, tell me, what is it that you're saying evolutionists can't give an answer for in regards to the origin of life?
Evolution is based upon the idea of reproduction and then natural selection working on reproduction.
Right.
If you don't have life yet, you don't have reproduction.
Right.
Wow, what a concept. Huh? That's the problem evolutionists have. How does life get started? Because you can't have natural selection where you don't have one thing taking place after another thing.
Okay. All right. So the origin of life is an unanswerable question. Where did it come from?
Yes. And evolutionists will be the first to tell you we don't know how it started.
Okay, so let's go to a soundbite. Now, this is an interview with Stephen Meyer, and he is a researcher and college professor, and he is a creationist?
He is.
He is. Okay, so he's a researcher. Now, hey, there's a landmark thought for you, folks. There are researchers and professors and scientists that are creationists with good reason.
And I should say, I should specify a little bit more, that he is a design creationist, an intelligent design creationist. And intelligent design is a relatively new science that's come about basically about 20 years ago with the publication of a book by Dr. Michael Behe entitled Darwin's Black Box.
And we're going to get to that soon.
We will.
Okay. All right, so let's listen. This is an interview with Dr. Stephen C. Meyer about the origin of life.
Scientists who were discussing the origin of life, and these were people that were real leaders in the field, were very candid about the fact that we had no evolutionary explanation for the origin of how life first began. It was a question that Darwin didn't address. There were scientists who had tried to address it over the ensuing decades, and no satisfactory answer was forthcoming, and that's still the case.
Okay. Excuse me. So he's saying that they can't pinpoint it, but obviously you have to have life for any kind of evolutionary process to happen.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, life is information that's coded in the DNA. How do you get random arrangements of chemicals to code? In fact, how do you decide on what the code is? How do you get them to work together to produce a molecule that can replicate itself? And replication requires machinery to replicate. You have to have the molecule and the machinery to do it. How does that happen by random chance?
So there has to be some kind of design in place to make that replication process happen.
Yeah, that's right. And we're going to talk about a lot more of that as coming up. But that is a difficult, I consider it an insurmountable obstacle for evolutionists.
All right. So the first point that's important is the origin of life is a major, major, major gaping question in terms of an evolutionist. They can't tell you where life came from. Now, a creationist will say, the scriptures say that God created. So we look at the origin of life as the Almighty Creator himself.
Yes.
Okay, so let's go on to the second point, which is the appearance of design. And this one gets my blood pressure going. I have to admit, this one gets me going, and I'm going to really work at being self-contained here.
You can do it, right?
I know. I'm going to try. But to get this started, I want to go to another soundbite. This is from Dr. Faisal Rana, a microbiologist, in his book called The Cell's Design, talked about the difficulty of the appearance of design for evolutionists. This was from a podcast interview, all right? So he is a microbiologist, and again, he believes in intelligent design, and he's sort of reiterating what this difficulty of the appearance of design, because things are so, as you had mentioned, David, they're so detailed.
Yes.
In their minutiae.
And they work together so well, all of the pieces.
And we're going to get into some specifics on that shortly. But let's listen to his approach on this.
Fundamental question right off the bat here. Do biochemical systems appear to be designed?
The fact of the matter is nobody disputes that statement. Whether one is a skeptic or a Christian, whether one is a believer or a non-believer, they all agree that life appears to be designed. For example, the atheist Richard Dawkins, in his book The Blind Watchmaker, said that biology is the study of complicated things that give the appearance of having been designed for a purpose. The late Francis Crick, the Nobel laureate, who won the Nobel Prize for being a co-discoverer of the structure of DNA, said in his autobiography, What Mad Pursuit, biologists must constantly keep in mind that what they see was not designed, but rather evolved. And again, these are two statements that really reflect the fact that even as atheists, they see the evidence for design.
All right, so
This quote from Dr. Crick, it's just amazing to me that it appears to be Zion, but you have to keep in mind that it's not. That sounds like you've already concluded something that science is supposed to give you the evidence for. So you've made a conclusion in the absence of evidence.
So here, and folks, let's go slowly on this for a moment here. So what we're saying is that the scientific evidence is, if I use the word overwhelming, that's not an exaggeration.
No. If from the quotes you've seen, it's not.
Okay. The scientific evidence is overwhelming that as we get into the smallness of life, cellular structure and so forth, which again, we're going to get specific on shortly, it looks like it was a finely designed machine. Right?
Absolutely.
And so an evolutionist's challenge with that is the minute you put the word designed in there, it takes away the theory of natural selection according to the evolutionist's stance.
Yeah, again, please note that there is a deeper level philosophy now which at the very surface here is influencing how you interpret evidence. We see evidence of design, we say, well, there must have been a designer. Evolutionists see evidence design and say, yeah, it looks that way, but we already know that it's not that way.
All right, and let me give you just a real regular, everyday, practical example. You're familiar with Stonehenge, right?
Stonehenge, yes.
Okay, do you know who built Stonehenge?
No.
But it was built.
Yep, some ancient Celtic people, I guess.
Okay, so we don't know who built it. It's this rock formations that are massively heavy rocks in this circular setup, and it's a real mystery. But you know, everybody believes somebody designed that, correct?
Correct.
And now, why is it that we can accept the design of a pile of rocks, and we somehow or other won't accept the design of the cellular structures that are alive and make life work?
You know, that's a great example. With the Ice Age
pushing... It's rocks, David. It's rocks.
Yeah. When the Ice Age pushed boulders down, there's boulders that appear in the middle of fields all over the world.
Right.
They call them erratics. So from a probability theory, you know, they could have arranged the erratic rocks and boulders to form Stonehenge. But like you said, nobody believes that that happened.
Right. And we look at it and I say, of course there's a design to it. So why wouldn't there be a design to cellular structures? Folks, if you have a thought, it's 866-985-4255. Toll free, 866-985-4ALL. We are live Sunday mornings from 7 to 9. That means we're on right now.
Stay connected to Rick and I at ChristianQuestions.net, no matter the day or time.
Let's go to another soundbite, David. This is from Dr. Michael Denton. He's talking about the universe is fitted for carbon-based life. Now, who is Dr. Michael Denton?
Dr. Michael Denton is a scientist who lives in Australia, and he wrote a book way back in 1985 called Evolution, A Theory in Crisis. And he was one of the early writers that was a scientist that was challenging. And I think at that time, he didn't necessarily have a creationist viewpoint, but he was looking at the theory from a scientific and critical standpoint and saying, there's a lot of stuff that's being believed here and set up that just doesn't stand scrutiny.
Okay, let's listen to what Dr. Michael Denton has to say about the universe. We've been talking micro, now let's talk macro.
The evidence of science is that the universe is fit for carbon-based life, and as I've argued in my book, fit for beings of biology very similar to ourselves. So this is a purely scientific sort of thing. The universe looks as if it's fit uniquely for carbon-based life and beings like ourselves. The design inference is something that the individual must make on this evidence. The evidence is pretty extraordinary, and clearly, as Paul Davis and many other people in Hoyle have said, the appearance of design is overwhelming, okay? But the actual science shows that it's fit, uniquely fit.
That's interesting, because he's saying that the universe is designed for carbon-based life. And before we get to the next call and to David's comments on this, Jonathan, Psalm 8, verses 3 to 6.
When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have ordained, what is man that you take thought of him, and the son of man that you take care for him? Yet you have made him a little lower than God. You crowned him with glory and majesty. You make him to rule over the works of your hands. You have put all things under his feet.
All right, so David, we have a scripture that is looking at the heavens as the work of the fingers of God, which to me is a wonderfully descriptive approach to getting an understanding of the greatness of God.
Yeah, you can see from his intention, from the very beginning, from the Big Bang Theory, has been to create a place where man can live and thrive.
So now let's put that together with the last soundbite from Dr. Michael Denton. He's talking about the universe. The universe is fitted for carbon-based life. I this is over my head.
Dr. Denton is being very careful with his words here. He uses the word design and he uses the word fit or fitness. Design now is a perspective. If something looks designed, that is a conclusion you're drawing. But he's saying it's a scientific fact that the universe has been fit for mankind. Now, there's no interpretation or perspective involved here. The physics of the universe, the way that carbon, the chemistry of carbon and oxygen and hydrogen and all these other things work together in order to provide the necessary functionality and chemistry for life to exist, for carbon-based life to exist, the universe is fit for that. And he's saying that's a scientific fact.
All right, and when you look at things like that, you say, wow, there's something very, very special here. So, you know, we said at the outset of this segment there were three things that evolutionists have a hard time answering. One was the origin of life. The second was the appearance of design. The third one is coming up in just a moment here, but folks, stay with us. This is very, very exciting stuff.
This is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan here with Rick with our special guest, David Stein. Our subject: did God create or did we evolve? How can a mousetrap, that's right, a mousetrap, spring open the weakness of evolution's arguments? That's next. Oh, snap.
You're listening to Christian Questions.
Welcome back. This is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan here with Rick with our special guest, David Stein. Our subject this morning, did God create or did we evolve? To be a part of our program, call toll-free 866-985-4255. That's 866-985-4ALL. We're live Sunday mornings from 7 to 9. That means we're on right now. And our website, ChristianQuestions.net.
And Jonathan, as we continue our discussion with David Stein here this morning on creation and evolution, I want to remind our listeners that we are not on for our second hour in all of the areas that you're listening right now. So if you're in one of those areas where we're just on for the 7 to 8 hour, you can stay with us by going to ChristianQuestions.net, going to the left side of the website, click the Listen Live button, and you can stay with us for that second hour, because the things that we're discussing here, we're just going to discuss in more detail in that second hour. You don't want to miss it.
And David sure is passionate about this subject.
Yeah, he is. Not a scientist, David, but have done a lot of scientific study and research.
Yes, it's an important question.
All right, so before we get into this mousetrap thing that you sprung on us, let's go to the phones.
All right, we have James from Tennessee. Good morning, James, and welcome to Christian Questions.
Good morning. This is the first time I've heard your show, but there were several things that you all were talking about, and I thought some information might be beneficial.
Go ahead.
Are you familiar with the Genome Project that was completed under President Clinton about 20 years ago?
Yes, we
where
are.
Where they looked at the entire genetic strand. Mm-hmm. They've been analyzing it since, and what they're finding has been startling to them. They're finding that the genes in that genetic code, our DNA, are not evolving over hundreds, thousands, millions of years. Actually, the strand is set up to try gene combinations over one, two, possibly three generations. The point of this is that you don't need millions of years of evolution for man to arrive. A certain set of genetic code can create that. So if you believe in intelligent design, if you believe in creationism, the Genome Project, if you really look at it and analyze it, is another scientific support. I hope I said that clearly and you followed the line of thinking, but people are evolving, changing in as little as one or two generations as far as how genes are substituted within the genetic code and the DNA strand.
All right, David, a quick response because we need to keep moving here.
Well, that's very interesting, James. Appreciate that. Haven't seen a lot of information after the Genome Project was completed. We remember that very, very well. and no doubt it's proving a good foundation for a lot more research. Appreciate the heads up. One of the things I've always appreciated about DNA in terms of creation is that it is a code that came into existence very, very early on in life, and that code has never changed. The code can't change. It's the alphabet, if you will, for life. So DNA can't evolve. What can change, and that's one definition of evolution, is the way that genes are put together. But appreciate that very much. It's very helpful.
James, thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it.
Take care.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And you know, very interesting, because it gives a sense of there is intelligence behind this. And folks, that's the thing you got to take from this. There's intelligence, and even evolutionists say there's an appearance of intelligence, but they're going to say, but it's not really there. And I say to them, what are you talking about? You know, you have the appearance of intelligence, and we'll apply intelligence to so many different areas of life, but then we're going to say, but it doesn't really fit with this most extraordinary setup that we can't even grasp. I mean, it took us until that mapping of the genome project to even understand the map, not to make it, but to understand that there is a map and an organization.
You know, and as science advances, especially on microbiology, and we're going to talk a lot about that in this segment, the more they advance, the more they find complexity, the more they find design.
All right, folks, if you have a thought, it's 866-985-4255. Toll free, 866-985-4ALL. We're live Sunday mornings from 7 to 9. That means we're on right now.
And you're listening to Christian Questions with Jonathan and Rick with our special guest, David Stein. The subject, did God create or did we evolve?
Let's, Fred, we're going to skip the next soundbite, okay? So cue up number 8, because we just don't have time. The next soundbite was supposed to be Dr. Michael Behe, who is very, very instrumental in this. He gives an explanation of his questioning. He's a scientist questioning evolution at the very beginning, and then coming up with an understanding of something called irreducible complexity. All right, so David, explain, because this is the third point that evolutionists cannot answer. At the biochemical level, certain subunits of life cannot come into existence gradually. Explain that concept briefly before we go to another soundbite.
Okay, all right, great. If I can go back just for a moment, Dr. Behe was like every other biologist. He believed in the party line that evolution was true. And then he read, we had Dr. Michael Denton on earlier, who wrote the book back in 1985, and it was the first time that Behe had ever been exposed to a criticism of evolution. It was just unheard of. And that triggered him to start to look. He was a microbiologist. It triggered him to start looking at things. And he came out with a book entitled Darwin's Black Box, in which he produces a very significant challenge, and that's where we are now. This is where Jonathan's mousetrap has come from. In his book, he postulated this idea of irreducible complexity. Irreducible complexity simply means that if you have a machine, you can take a certain number of parts off and it'll still run. For example, in your car, take the trim off. Will the car run?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Take out the seats. It'll run.
Not comfortably, but it will.
You get the thought. Eventually, you get, when you start taking things, you get to the point where you can't take any more away without affecting the functionality. And Behe uses, just as a basic illustration, the mousetrap. You can take pieces, you can make a mousetrap with all kinds of bells and whistles, but in order for it to function as a mousetrap, it has to have certain fundamental things. For example, it's got to have a platform, it's got to have a spring, it's got to have a hammer, it's got to have a catch or a trigger, and it's got to have a holding bar.
And so you're looking at an illustration of the old-fashioned, the most old-fashioned type of mousetrap.
That's right, okay. That's right. And in Christian Questions Rewind, we have this illustration that you'll be able to see. So folks, when you go on and take a look at that, you'll be able to see that for yourself. You can't take any other part away or else it ceases to function. Now, what Michael Behe discovered is that within the realm of microbiology, our bodies are filled with these little tiny machines, micro machines, within the cell. I mean, we're talking very, very tiny. And they work just as machines work in the real world. So the question is, in order for them to function, they have to have a minimum number of parts. That's irreducible complexity.
And those parts just couldn't arrive one at a time over a period of years and years and years and years.
And that's what evolution says, the way things happened. One at a time, very sequential, very slow, and you can't arrive at a machine that works that way.
All right, we're going to get very specific on that in a moment. Before we do that, though, I want to go back to another soundbite, and this is from the evolutionary standpoint, and this is a scientist who, on that YouTube program we were talking about, Evolution versus Creation, listened to the scientists. He's basically saying that God should be fired if God was the creator of man. So he's got some – I want you to hear the reasoning, and David will respond to that, and then we'll get into some of the biology that you were just talking about.
The implication of intelligent design is that we have – that God is a very, very bad engineer. I mean, an engineer who has designed an eye with the optic nerve having to cross the retina will be fired. An engineer that we have designed the human jaw would be fired. Our jaw is not big enough for all our teeth. God making this trivial, obvious mistake and errors of design, well, maybe their God does those things, certainly not mine. I don't want to have to worship a God that it is not smart enough to do as well as a human engineer.
Okay, that's pretty loaded.
It is.
Welcome to Christian Questions. and David, I'm not going to ask you to respond to that. We're going to save your response on that specifically for the second hour. But his challenge is, look, God was really sloppy, for instance, in the design of the eye, because the optic nerve crosses the retina, and that is obviously a very dumb design. He's saying, come on, a human engineer could have figured that out. So we're going to get back to that. Folks, you have to stay with us for the second hour to get the answer on that one. You go to christianquestions.net. If we're not in your listening area, christianquestions.net, click on the Listen Live button and join our conversation. So, David, let's get specific now. With the concept of irreducible complexity, we talked about a mousetrap as an illustration. You can't take the basic parts away. Otherwise, the mousetrap is just a pile of hardware, and it's useless, totally, completely useless without one thing. How does that fit into biology?
Well, in Dr. Behe's book, Darwin's Black Box, he goes through a number of illustrations on the biological level of machines or chemical sequences that could not have come together in an evolutionary stepwise fashion. They had to be complete in order for them to work from the very beginning.
So created as a unit.
As a unit.
Okay.
That's right. And evolution can't explain that. One specific, and there's several in the book. I do recommend the book. One specific one that really caught my attention was the flagellum of a bacteria. Now, all of us, if we go back to our 10th grade biology, we remember looking at bacteria, and you may remember there were certain types of bacteria that had this little tail that whipped around that propelled the bacteria around its medium of where it lived. Well, in this age of microbiology, where we have tools that enable us to see very, very fine details of the cell, you wouldn't believe what they found when they looked at how that flagellum operated. They found a tiny electric motor. Yes, a motor. And it had all the parts of a motor.
In the tail?
In the tail.
Of the bacteria.
Yeah, that's right.
Folks, you getting this?
It had a rotor and a stator. It had a chemical apparatus around there that would produce the charges. And this thing spins. It actually spins just as a motor would today. And all of these things are set up so beautifully. Now, the question is, and this is the difficult question for evolutionists, how can such a thing come together in a stepwise fashion?
Right. It either works or it doesn't, is what you're
saying.
Yeah,
that's right. Suppose there's a mutation that makes a rotor, and the rotor itself is complex. But let's suppose that one mutation produces a rotor. What good is it without a stator? What good is it without the chemicals around that would produce the electrical charge that would run it? It wouldn't.
So the idea of irreducible complexity is a very, very serious idea that needs to be understood in relation to the, quote, evolutionary science. Now, and here's the thing, David, and I want to make this point before this hour ends. What seems to have happened with evolution is they are, and this is a Rick opinion, it seems to me they are so paranoid to acknowledge design that they ignore the glaring facts of design. They'll give you the appearance of design and say, but it's not really design. They're going to give you the thoughts about design but say it's not really there. And because they have a paranoia, what's that paranoia based on? We got about like 30 seconds here.
Well, it's based upon their philosophy that God cannot enter into any explanation of things on the earth. That's the foundation.
Because if you have design, then you have a reason for it.
Well, yeah. Now we're getting to some of the social implications. If God exists, then there's a responsibility to the Creator.
And we're going to discuss that in much more detail in the second hour. So we're going to touch back on all of these things. David, just final comments for this hour.
Well, just in the case of this motor, the idea of natural selection is that if a mutation occurs which is beneficial, it gets naturally selected. You can't have pieces of a motor or anything else that don't work to be selected.
So, folks, what we've tried to do in this hour is raise questions about the validity of the evolutionary theory based on, not scriptures, amazingly enough, but based on science itself. We as creationists embrace science in its reality because science supports scriptural reason. Stay with us for the second hour. There's so much more to come on this very, very important subject, and a very timely one at that. For Jonathan Rick and David Stein, it's Christian Questions. We will be back in the second hour. Go to christianquestions.net. Post your comments on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be back soon. But till then, did God create or did we evolve? Think about it.
This is Christian Questions.
Socrates once said, "The only true wisdom is in knowing you know nothing." Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to Christian Questions Talk Radio with your breakfast with Jonathan and Rick. This isn't your typical Christian commentary. We love talking with our audience and promise to never talk at you like so many talk shows do today. This is a conversation about biblical topics as we look at them from a different perspective. And Jonathan, what is that topic on this fine Sunday morning?
Well, Rick, our question is, did God create or did we evolve? And we have our special guest, David Stein, with us. Very thankful for that. But our theme text comes from Isaiah 45, verse 18. "For thus says the Lord, who created the heavens, he is the God who formed the earth and made it. He established it and did not create it. It a waste place, but formed it to be inhabited."
So in our first hour, again, as you mentioned, we have our special guest David Stein with us. David, you are from the Allentown, Pennsylvania area.
That's correct.
You are a minister in your church.
Yes, I'm a pastor in the Allentown Bible Students Ecclesia.
And science is a passion of yours.
Yes, engineering is my background, science is my passion, all of that after my love of the scriptures.
Okay, and we are just looking at the concept and challenging the concept of evolution as scientific fact, and we have established that it is literally still a theory, but oftentimes it's just accepted as fact. And David, if you can, give us just a quick summation of some of the things we talked about, and I want to stress the word quick here, quick summation of some of the things we talked about in the first hour.
Well, we started out with the scriptures. We wanted to ask the question, what does the Bible say about where mankind came from? And it's very clear, God created the heavens and the earth. We moved from there into the belief of Jesus and in the Apostle Paul in the first man, Adam, and the first woman, Eve.
So scripturally, both of them state their absolute belief in Adam and Eve, not as a theory, not as an illustration, not as an allegory, but as real live human beings.
That's right. I mean, as I read the words of Jesus and Paul, I can't, as a Christian, throw out the existence of Adam and Eve, therefore the creation of Adam and Eve.
Okay. So what you're saying then, the creation of Adam and Eve is a separate entity, a separate part, a separate compartment of the overall creation process.
Yeah, that's right. They didn't get here by descending through the apes.
Okay, and we looked at some of the concepts that evolution does not have answers for. Namely, one was the origin of life.
Yes, origin of life. The second was the appearance of design, and the third was that certain subunits of life can't come into existence in a stepwise fashion as evolution claims.
Okay, and that is the concept of irreducible complexity.
Right, a concept originated by Dr. Michael Behe.
So are you throwing science out the window?
Absolutely not. True science has got to be in agreement with the true Bible. We're people of truth. God did do something in this universe by creating it, and science will give us the information about that.
So what we're looking at is science, and we're trying to take away all of the assumptions built upon the science and just stay with science.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, science, scientific evidence is like judicial evidence. It has to be interpreted. And if you've got a frame of reference that you interpret it with, you may get good answers, you may get bad answers. Evolution is a frame of reference, and so scientific evidence is interpreted in consequence or in harmony with that frame. We have a different frame of reference. We have a frame of reference that God created, so we interpret science. It's the same scientific evidence, but what comes out of it is influenced a lot by what you are expecting to get.
Ah, and that's an important point. And an evolutionist has a religious fervor for getting what they're looking for, just as a creationist would have a religious fervor.
Yeah, I don't think it is a stretch to call it a religious fervor, because so much of what evolution says can be demonstrated to be a matter of faith. For example, just the throwing out of the appearance of design. On what basis do you do that? On the philosophical basis that God can't be part of it.
Don't get me started on that one. Jonathan, let's read some scriptures to calm me down here.
All right.
Because when you say the appearance of design and say, but there is no designer, I just have a hard time with such complexity being just an appearance. But anyway, a few scriptures, Jonathan, just about God creating everything.
May you be blessed of the Lord, maker of heaven and earth.
Okay, there's a Psalm 115:15.
For all the gods of the peoples are idols, but the Lord made the heavens.
Okay, and that was not Psalm 96:5.
May the Lord bless you from Zion, who made heaven and earth.
So on top of the belief of the Apostle Paul and Jesus, as we already stated, you have these scriptures that give you a sense, a comprehensive sense of God is the centerpiece of all of this.
He is the author and the designer.
Yes. Okay, so we have the idea of the evolution of the eye. And remember in the first hour, we played a soundbite from a scientist that said, well, God should be fired if he designed the eye because he did a really lousy job. He made a dumb mistake with having the optical nerve cross the retina. Before we get to that, though, Jonathan, why don't we quickly go to the phones, and then we'll get to the answer. Did God make a dumb mistake in designing the eye or not?
We have Julius from Connecticut. Good morning, Julius, and welcome to Christian Questions.
Thank you. Good morning, gentlemen. Welcome to David Stein. I've heard him before.
Yes.
Thank
He's
you.
Quite the student, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, I have a poem type thing. I'm not going to read it. Just mention it to you. If God should go on strike, I don't know if you ever heard of it. Oh, what a wonderful treatise on the need for God. But anyway, just one quick thing about my favorite illustration on design. It's very simple. I said to my peers, those who would listen. The sun, S-U-N, our
mm-hmm.
sun,
yeah,
93 million miles, about that, mm-hmm. more or less, you know. If we were any closer, we'd cook. If we were any further, we'd freeze.
Right.
Number one. Number two, the sun physically, literally, is a ball of fire. How come it doesn't dissipate?
Right.
By design. Thank you. God bless.
Thank you, Julius. Appreciate your call.
Good day.
And David, there are probably millions of illustrations like that Julius just gave that are simple, straightforward, and say, huh, think about that.
I appreciate what Julius said so very much. As you say, it's one of millions of little data points that, again, going back to our first hour, that show the fitness of the universe for mankind.
Okay. Now, Jonathan, let's go to Proverbs 20:12, because we're going to be talking about the eye for a few minutes here.
The hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord has made both of them.
All right, so if the eye was designed dumbly, as our soundbite from the first hour said, God is taking credit for the design right here.
He is. He did it.
All right, so the buck stops there. Charles Darwin early on saw the complexity of the eye was a challenge to his theory. And I just want to read a couple of lines from his book, Charles Darwin, Chapter 6, The Origin of the Species. To suppose that the eye, with all its inimitable contrivances for adjusting the focus to different distances, for admitting different amounts of light, and for the correction of spherical and chromatic aberration, could be formed by natural selection, it seems, I freely confess, absurd in the highest possible degree. So Charles Darwin said, look, I'm looking at the eye, and to say that this came about by natural selection, it does seem absurd, doesn't it?
Yeah, even back then, he recognized that there seemed to be limits to what natural selection should do. But again, he had faith in his theory and said, well, I can't figure this out, and it seems very unlikely, but I'm still resting on my case.
Okay, let's go to a soundbite. in relation to the accusation that the eye is designed in a dumb fashion, this is Casey Luskin, and this was a podcast service on intelligent design featured. Intelligent Design for the Future that was hosted by Casey Luskin. Let's listen to his comments on this about the eye.
Miller maintains that the vertebrate eye was not intelligently designed because the optic nerve extends over the retina instead of going out the back of the eye, an alleged design flaw. According to Miller, quote, visual quality is degraded because light scatters as it passes through several layers of cellular wiring before reaching the retina, unquote. Similarly, Richard Dawkins contends that the retina is wired in backwards because light-sensitive cells face away from the incoming light, which is partly blocked by the optic nerve. In Dawkins' ever-humble opinion, the vertebrate eye is, quote, the design of a complete idiot, unquote.
Well, they so they're saying they're taking issue with the design of the eye. First of all, your comments, and we're going to go back to Casey Luskin in a moment. Any just putting it in perspective?
Well, they're saying it's a bad design because it produces a blind spot. Now I ask you, Rick, does the blind spot in your left and right eye bother you very much?
No.
No. Do you see it at all?
Well, it's a blind spot. How can I see it?
Well, that's right. I mean, we've got two eyes. We've got binocular vision, and the brain meshes the both of the image fields together so that the blind spot in each eye is not discerned at all. There is functionally, when you've got two eyes, and of course, because of other problems, those that don't may have more of a problem. But from the original design, there is no functional problem with that blind spot. So that's the first point to make, that there's no functional problem.
So in other words, you know, they're saying designed by an idiot. You're saying, well, look, put the two eyes together, and it dissolves what they're saying the problem is.
Yeah. Okay. That's right, from a functional standpoint.
Right.
But from going on beyond that, there's compelling reason for the design that God made, and I think that is covered in our next soundbite.
So Casey Luskin continues, and he essentially vindicates the design of the eye, and this is very, very, very interesting. Let's listen to this.
But the overall design of the eye actually optimizes visual acuity. To achieve the high-quality vision that vertebrates need, retinal cells require a large blood supply. By facing the photoreceptor cells towards the back of the retina and extending the optic nerve out over them, the cells are able to plug directly into blood vessels that feed the eye, maximizing access to blood.
So, okay, David, translate, because I don't know what he's talking about.
Okay, all right. What Casey is suggesting here is that the arrangement that God has made by putting the optic nerve where it is optimizes the amount of blood that the retina can get. If you put the retina in the back of the eye, like Richard Dawkins and that other person said, you know, well, this would be a better design, now you're reducing the amount of blood available to the cells and creating other problems. He mentions this idea of optimization. Now, this is an area that I know a lot about because I am, by training and by education, an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you are designing something, you always have to face reality, that you can't get everything that you want. I remember in many project meetings that I was at in my career where we were putting together a new product, and marketing wanted this, and the engineering wanted that, and manufacturing wanted that, and service wanted that. And all of a sudden, to be able to put all those things together, you blow the cost of the project out of the water, and you can't fit. You make something that's ungainly. So engineers understand that design requires optimization, that you take the best parts of everything, you put them together in the best way to make the product that overall is the best. It's optimized. And that is the case with the eye.
And in that case, having two eyes dissolves the issue anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Functionally, it's a non-issue.
You're listening to Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan here with Rick with our special guest, David Stein. Our subject, did God create or did we evolve? If you have a thought, give us a call at 866-985-4255. That's 866-985-4ALL. We're live Sunday mornings from 7 to 9. That means we're on right now on our website, ChristianQuestions.net.
And folks, you really want to go to CQ Rewind for this program. You want to subscribe to the full edition if you don't already, because it will have all of this that we've talked about on paper, plus so much more in the bonus material. You subscribe. It's a free service. You can unsubscribe at any time. You go to ChristianQuestions.net, subscribe, CQ Rewind, the full edition. You will be happy that you did.
Great illustrations and bonus material.
Absolutely. David, one other thought?
Yeah, Rick, you know, I regret I couldn't find something that I saw in an engineering journal about 25 years ago. I was looking for it in preparation for this program, couldn't find it. But it was an engineer's assessment of the design of the eye from an engineering standpoint. And he had about 20 or 30 points that he listed that showed how beautifully it was designed, all the way from its ability to receive colors, to detect motion, chromatic aberration of the lens, the heat cooling capacities of it, one thing after another, just a beautiful example of optimization to give not only human beings but all vertebrate life that has this type of eye exquisite vision.
And just remember that if you are an evolutionist, you must believe then that this all happened by chance and happenstance, by natural selection. There was no design. So when you say he talks about the design of the eye, an evolutionist would say, well, it's the appearance of the design of the eye. It's not actually a design, because you can't have a design, because if you have a design, we'll get into that in the next segment. But it brings up the fallacy of taking design out of a magnificent creation, not just the human body, not just cellular things, but the entire universe. Folks, think about this.
This is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan, here with Rick, with our special guest David Stein, and our subject, did God create or did we evolve? Coming up, which came first, the chicken or the egg? This question is very relevant to our evolution discussion. That's next.
You're listening to Christian Questions.
Welcome back. This is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan, here with Rick and our special guest David Stein. And our subject, did God create or did we evolve? To be a part of our program, call toll-free 866-985-4255. That's 866-985-4ALL. We're live Sunday mornings from 7 to 9. That means we're on right now. And our website, ChristianQuestions.net.
And Jonathan, we like you said, we do have David Stein here with us. Fascinating, fascinating topic this morning. I love going through this and looking at science for what it is and trying to understand it in its clarity. And you know what, David, when I look at science, I look at science and I have the sense of awe when you see the complexity of things. And what the awe that it brings me to is the greatness of God.
Yeah, and the more that you look at it, the more you see these marvelous, well-thought-out designs.
And that's the thing. Now, Jonathan, you said something about a chicken and an egg.
That's right, I did.
Sounds like breakfast.
All right, famous question.
All right, so the great old philosophical question. But how, David, how is this philosophical question relevant to our evolutionary discussion and debate this morning?
Well, of course, everyone's heard the philosophical question. You know, where do you get eggs from? From chickens. Where do you get chickens from eggs? What came first? It bears some interesting correspondences when we talk about proteins. Now, everybody knows that you need protein in your diet, but what do we mean on a microbiological level when we talk about proteins? Every cell in our body is made up of proteins. Proteins are the building blocks of what we have. You put proteins together, you get amino acids. Amino acids are necessary for life. So where do these proteins come from? Well, the answer is that the DNA, that is the inherited material that we get from our mothers and fathers, it is a coded sequence of atoms that allows you to make a protein. And each part of the DNA allows you to make a different type of protein. The DNA will make that protein, and then the protein will be used. So where did the DNA come from to make the protein? We've got a classic chicken and egg.
Okay.
You know, you can't get DNA unless you have DNA, and you can't get proteins unless you have DNA. So which came first? This is really takes us back to the origin of life.
All right, and let's go back to Faisal Rana on this exact question on chicken and egg and the establishment of proteins in this whole picture of the design of not only humankind, but cellular structure and essentially the universe. Let's listen to this.
You need proteins in order to make proteins. Mm-hmm. And those proteins that make proteins have to be made themselves by proteins. And to get proteins to fold, you have to have proteins that are already properly folded, but they in turn need to have proteins to properly fold them. And so you have this chicken and egg system, in a sense, that can't really, I think, be explained through evolutionary processes.
Yeah.
That system has to come into place all at once. And there's got to be a mind that is essentially establishing those mutual interdependencies in such a way that the system operates properly from the get-go.
All right. So you have the sense of there's got to be something that puts it all in place. You can't. It's like this continual process, but there's no starting point. There's no waking up point.
Yeah. Dr. Reyna here talked about folding proteins, and I think that's another little area that just boggles the mind. When the cell makes a protein, the protein is useful when it gets folded. That is to say, when the protein comes together, it assumes a certain physical geometric arrangement of those atoms. And that geometrical arrangement is like a key that does other things. For example, there is a protein that allows you to build parts of micro machines. And it's the shape of that protein that's so important. So here's where the wisdom of God just blows your mind. It's not only the atoms and how the protein is made, but the physical structure, the shape of that protein, which is essential, that goes on later. How do you figure something like that out?
That's amazing.
This is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan, here with Rick, with our special guest, David Stein. Our subject, did God create or did we evolve? If you have a thought, give us a call, 866-985-4255. That's 866-985-4ALL. We're live Sunday mornings from 7 to 9. That means we're on right now. And we need your help. We need you to go to ChristianQuestions.net and help us out on Facebook. Post your comments. Is this the kind of subject you'd like to hear again? Or do you have a subject that you're thinking about that you'd love to talk about? So give us your thoughts at ChristianQuestions.net. Go to Facebook.
Yeah, so you can post them on our Facebook page. You can like us while you're at it, and give us a sense of where you're coming from, especially with a subject matter like this. So David, getting back to this protein thing, one of the things that, you know, Matt is sitting in for Trish this morning, call screening, and he mentioned, are we saying that evolution then completely is just a fallacy, or is there any kind of evolution that we look at and say, well, this can work, but that can't? You know, again, from a scientific standpoint, what's your take on that, and meshing it with scripture as well?
Well, if you go back to the original definition of evolution, or working definition of evolution, is change over time. Nobody has a problem with that. Creationists don't have a problem with that. Evolutionists, of course, use it. The question is, how much change that can you get? For example, evolutionists will point to the peppered moth of London back in the 1800s, when the age came, where the industrial age, where they were putting a lot of carbon into the atmosphere.
Yeah, so,
that's right. The population of the pepper moth had been these bright-colored moths, but when everything got blackened, the birds could see the white moths very clearly. So they would pick off the white moths. And moths that, because of just natural variation within their genome, were a little bit darker, survived more. And so there was a natural selection. There was a change over time in the ratio of the moths. You know, that's pointed to as an example of evolution. And it certainly is an example of evolution within the moth species. And then when they stopped using all of the coal, and it wasn't so dark and dank in London anymore, guess what? The ratios changed back, you see. So life has built within itself the ability to change in order to survival.
And in the scriptures, you get a sense that kind of evolution is actually scriptural.
Oh, yes. It is.
Well, how so? Tell me.
Well, it is the way that God has made each species and whatnot to adapt to changing circumstances. But now when we get to, do we see a peppered moth turning into a hawk or something like that? That can't happen because there's nothing within the peppered moth genome that would allow it to have hawk-like characteristics.
Okay.
Within the genome, there is the variation of color and whatnot. And this gets back to the scriptural principle of reproduction according to its kind.
So coordinated change here.
Well, we're going to talk about coordinated change.
Okay, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, okay.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. You know what I mean.
But what I was going to conclude with is to say that any change that can take place is only based upon what is already in the genome. If there isn't a gene or a chromosome in the genome for a characteristic, it cannot be selected because it's not there, and the DNA will reproduce according to its kind.
And I think one of the interesting scriptural concepts on that is in the creation account, you know, God said that, you know, let each reproduce after its own kind. And that gives you a sense that there is a set genome. We look at it now and we look back and say, okay, what he could be saying there is there's this set genome within this kind, within dogs, within cats, within alligators, within bears. And after its kind, there can be certainly changes in evolution within those kinds.
That's correct.
And the scriptures tell us that. So it's not like we're saying, no, look, any kind of change is absolutely no because this Bible doesn't say that. The Bible does say that, and I think that's an important part of this.
And agriculture for thousands of years has depended upon the fact that there can be variation. That's why you can select your cows and your horses for certain qualities that you want, or select cows to produce more milk. That is built into the genome.
Folks, if you have a thought, it's 866-985-4255, toll free, 866-985-4ALL. We are live Sunday mornings from 7 to 9. That means we're on right now.
And the conversation continues online at christianquestions.net. Contact us there with your questions or comments. Also interact with us on our Facebook and our always updated blog. Again, christianquestions.net.
And again, we'd love to get your comments on Facebook. Tell us what you think of subjects like this. If you'd like to hear more like this, that's a great place to let us know what you think. So, David, I sort of was pushing you ahead a little bit. You have coordinated change written on my paper here. Okay? I wasn't very coordinated, but I was trying to change. What can I tell you? What are you talking about here?
Well, we're talking about changes that evolution, say, took place, and yet there are changes in two or more separate areas that seem to coordinate together. And there's nothing within random chance evolution that can account for these coordinated changes.
So when you say two separate areas, you're talking about two entirely separate kinds of things?
Yeah. For example, let's take gender, male and female.
Okay.
How did that come into existence?
Well, I know. Pick me.
Well, you see that men and women are different. Males and females in every species are different. How did they change together in order to have this functionality between both of them? Put in another way, in the family Mammalia, mammals. Mammals can produce milk for children. All right. Well, now you have a baby, and now you have the milk production facility of a female within the species. How did both of them together? I mean, the baby just said, "I want milk," and so it suddenly started to come, and that was the whole purpose of the milk production. So how do these things coordinate together? And there's many, many examples of that.
So coordinated change. You have things that are unrelated but yet have to be in place for the other to exist. It's just like the flagellum that you're talking about in the first hour. You can't have it work without all of the pieces simultaneously being there.
Yeah, even cross species. For example, bees and flowers.
Right.
Flowers evolved just exactly what bees needed, and bees evolved exactly what the flowers provided.
But there's no design to that.
Yeah, I mean, how do you coordinate such things like that?
Of course there's design to that. And folks, those are some of the basic questions that, as you look at this, take heart, because the scriptures do not contradict science in its purest form. We're here this morning to embrace science for what it means, because it enhances what the scriptures say.
If you have a thought, give us a call, 866-985-4255. That's 866-985-4ALL.
What we're not here to do is embrace the religious fervor that the evolutionist side of the argument has taken upon itself to ignore certain things that just don't work with the evolutionary theory, to ignore the fact that you have what they call an appearance of design, but a denial that there is a designer. And let's get to that, David, because, all right, does it really matter what you believe? Okay, does it matter? So if you believe in evolution or if you believe in creation, what are some of the end results of following through on the evolutionary path of belief in terms of mankind?
Well, this gets into an area that is controversial as well. But the bottom line is that what you believe will influence how you think, and how you think will influence how you act. Neo-Darwinian evolution teaches that there was no God involved, and it's very closely akin to atheism that says that there's no God that exists. I mean, there is a branch of evolution that acknowledges the existence of God, but says that he just wound the universe up and doesn't care, and everything is going on. He takes no interest in what's going on in this universe. But if you believe that there's no God, and if you believe that there's no consequences to what you do in the large scheme of things in the universe, then that opens you up to a lot of behavior and thinking, which is not going to be very kind to your neighbor.
All right, and I want to pause on that. I want to pause. We've got like 2 minutes left in this segment. But when you take the idea that there is no God, you're saying you're taking away larger accountability, not just in terms of necessarily personal actions, but universal actions that affect not only yourself but others on the other side of the world and so forth and so on. And we have examples in human behavior of acting without that accountability, and it's never good.
No.
So just list off some of the things that you see as some of the degrading aspects of the follow through on the belief in evolution without a God.
Well, here's some implications of Darwinian evolution theory. You have bullet points. No God. No accountability to God. No higher purpose in life. No guiding forces in the universe. Nothing makes sense or has to. No moral standards. No ethical standards.
Because it's natural selection and it's survival of the fittest.
Yeah, that's right. There doesn't have to be a morality. Morality is dictated by God. If there's no God, then there's no morality. No universal right and wrong. No absolutes. Everything is relative to the individual. No obligations to anyone. No universal direction. Man becomes his own God.
And it's interesting because, Jonathan, let's go to Psalm 100, verse 3.
Know that the Lord himself is God. It is he who has made us. And not we ourselves. We are his people and the sheep of his pasture.
And that's an important scripture because that puts a principle in place of who God is. And here's a hint, we're not it. Real quick, Dave, because we're almost out of time.
Yeah, and this list here, it's not to indict anyone. I had a very good friend that I used to work with who was an atheist, one of the most moral and ethical men I've ever known. And he had placed that moral and ethical standard on himself. My point is that there's no philosophy that will force that on you.
And when you look at, and I know some will want to argue with this, but when you look at especially modern history, what you see is those who have done the most damage to the human race have been those who have been godless, because they have taken it upon themselves to be the dictator who decides for everyone else.
Yeah, final judge of right and wrong.
So, folks, there is a whole lot more than just science. Even though science is plenty, there's a whole lot more to this whole debate, and we need to understand it for what it really is.
This is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan here with Rick, with our special guest David Stein. Our subject, did God create or did we evolve? Do you know that there are social implications of Darwinism? Talk about abuse and heartache. That's next.
You're listening to Christian Questions.
Welcome back. This is Christian Questions. I'm Jonathan here with Rick, with our special guest David Stein, and our subject, did God create or did we evolve? To be a part of our program, call toll-free 866-985-4255. That's 866-985-4ALL. We're live Sunday mornings from 7 to 9. That means we're on right now. And our website, ChristianQuestions.net.
And as we get back into the subject, I want to start this segment with a soundbite that talks about the other side of the issue. And I have to admit, I find it amusing. Maybe too much so, but I do. It's called The Ape That Got Lucky. All right, so that should tell you where this is coming. But this is done in all seriousness about the development and how humankind came to be from an evolutionary standpoint. And we got this on YouTube, The Ape That Got Lucky. Fred, let's go to that.
Forests all over the world were replaced by grassland. A vast adaptive radiation began, creating a host of new species who could survive in open plains, not forests. One of these was a breed of apes that had a chance mutation, apes that could walk on two legs. These two-legged apes would have multiplied, as did all the other new creatures, over millions of years into many related species. By the time of Lucy, 3 million years ago, there were perhaps half a dozen different two-legged animals of this kind. Just one of these species would have been our ancestor. For some reason, probably just sheer chance, it survived when all the other two-legged creatures died out. This animal, and we do not yet know what it was, eventually became human.
dun dun dun. All right, so David, we hear that, and it absolutely flies in the face of everything we've been saying this morning. But any specific reaction? I saw you making a note there.
Yeah, Lucy, they have been going back for many years now, maybe a good century, been looking for these missing links, these apes that were the supposed ancestors of humankind. And they find these bits of bone and bits of tooth and skull and whatnot, and sometimes they put them together from different places, saying, well, it's not the same animal, but it's the same species. So there's a lot of speculation involved. There's even been some fraud. There was the Piltdown man who was paraded by evolutionists to be the one, and it turned out to be, I think, a jaw of a donkey or something like that. It was exposed to be what it is. The bottom line is, though, that as they look closer, they say, well, this one wasn't it. And I think that's what our soundbite was saying. You know, there's this, and this. We really don't know which one was the ancestor, because they always find some problem that precluded it, either in point of time or in point of physiology. So we still are where we were 100 years ago. There still is the missing link, and it's going to remain missing because, from a creationist standpoint, it never existed.
All right.
You're listening to Christian Questions. Our subject, did God create or did we evolve? If you have a thought, give us a call, 866-985-4255. That's 866-985-4ALL.
And we are live Sunday mornings from 7 to 9. That means we're on right now. Our website is christianquestions.net. We'd love to hear your comments, especially on this program on Facebook. Please go to Facebook. You can like us while you're there and put things in some perspective. So is this the kind of subject you want to hear more of, and so forth? David, go ahead.
Yeah, if I can say one more thing, and it's getting off of our outline a little bit, though. Any scientific theory, to be a good theory, has to be able to be falsified. And in scientific jargon, that means that if you come to me with a theory, there should be something I can find that will show that the theory is false. If I can't come up with anything that's false, then it's not really a theory. And that's where evolution comes in. There is no fact that they can't spin and take into consideration and show how it proves evolution. If you ask an evolutionist, well, what theory or what fact would show that it's not true? Well, there is none. Which means it can't be falsified, which means it's not a true scientific theory, it's a philosophy.
Okay, so that even goes a whole step further. But you know, one of the things in that last soundbite it brings us to is the idea that okay, you've got this evolving process, but there's no necessary standard because there's no design. And if there's no design and there's no standard, you run into all kinds of issues in terms of morality. And we want to get into that in just a moment. Jonathan, why don't we go to the phones first, and then we'll get to that point.
All right. We have Randall from Connecticut. Good morning, Randall, and welcome to Christian Questions.
Good morning. Happy Sunday, guys.
To you, too.
Hello,
you.
Mr. Stein.
Hello.
We have Job 38:4. Where were you when I founded the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Christianity does not depend upon a theory. God created the world and sets up systems as he wills. The Christian uses his God-given intellect to understand the science of the moment, but lives in faith. Wisdom 13:5. Far from the greatness and beauty of created things, their original author, by analogy, is seen. I personally believe that modern scientific evidence points towards God, and I also believe that some scientists are so committed to an atheistic viewpoint that it affects their overall judgment. Regardless, we should not idolize a theory, but worship God. Psalm 19:2, the heavens declare the glory of God, the sky proclaims its builder's craft.
Randall, thanks so much. Great scriptures there.
God bless you guys.
Take care.
Wonderful comments by Randall. I endorse them completely. Wonderful,
you know,
comments.
That Job 34:38 scripture is a wonderful sense of God challenging Job, saying, hey, okay. And, you know, he could be challenging modern science. Were you there when I created this and put that in place? Were you there?
But aren't we saying we embrace science for what it really is?
And that's the point. It is what we're saying here, folks, is we're not bashing science, not in the least. What we're challenging is when they take science and they build something upon it that is merely a theory, and it has got a predetermined end result, saying that there is no design. David?
I've appreciated comments from a number of intelligent design creationists. They are looking forward to the time when the science becomes overwhelmingly, and there'll be this paradigm shift to it. I mean, they believe it's coming, because every advancement of science in biology and whatnot has got to be interpreted one way or the other. Creationism is a more easy interpretation, just because we talked about appearance design. What does it seem to be? Whereas Darwinism has got to spin, it's got to make changes, it's got to reinterpret in order to fit it in with the theory that grows more and more inarticulate.
Okay, just another quick thing. I know this is off the outline a little bit, but Freedom Tower. The Freedom Tower is being built right now in New York City, you know, at the location of the replacement for the towers.
Yeah.
Yes. And you look at that. It is a magnificent-looking building. It is magnificent. It's beautiful, and it's going up. And we could look at that and say, okay, David, let me ask you a question. Is it can a human being, can we, in all of our wisdom and knowledge and understanding, can we create the human genome?
No,
we can map it, but we can't create it.
That's correct.
We can build the tower, though, right?
Yes.
Okay, so what if I were to tell you then, well, the tower is just an appearance of design. It's not really designed. It just is happening over time because of the shift of the earth and the wind and the rain and the seas and so forth and so on. Would you laugh at me? Would you laugh me right out of town? Because you say, come on, look at it. It's symmetrical. It's huge. It's beautiful. It's got a purpose. Of course there's a designer. Folks, when you look at all of God's creation, look at cellular life, you look at the universe, you look at all of the things in between, you see design. Let's not be foolish in recognizing the accomplishment of man, but ignoring the accomplishment of the intelligent designer of all things. Go ahead.
You know, related to that, Rick, is a modern science we call information science. It's kind of come into existence in at the same time as computers. But information science is a science in its own. It's very strict mathematical science, and it touches upon many, many areas of scientific expertise. Bottom line with information is that you can only get good information from a good information source. Good information can't come into being spontaneously. And DNA is good information.
And it's magnificent in its brilliance. But of course, if there's brilliance, then there must be design.
Yes.
Go to CQ Rewind. There is so much to this subject that we don't have time to cover. Go to ChristianQuestions.net, get the full edition.
You got to sign up for it, ChristianQuestions.net, CQ Rewind, the full edition. All right, there are several issues, David, that we began talking about in the last segment. I want to sort of try to, I know we have a lot here on the outline, and Julie, make sure all of this appears in CQ Rewind, the full edition. But just touch on some of the high points of some of the difficulties you end up with when you don't have that higher intelligence telling us and showing us where and what to do. Folks, if you have a thought, now would definitely be the time, 866-985-4255.
Well, Rick, there has always been godlessness in the world. And whenever there's godlessness, there's activity and behavior which is hurtful to other people. The moral standard and ethical standard, the laws of God that he gave both to the, first to the nation of Israel and then through the teachings of Jesus, allow us to live together in peace and harmony if we put those laws to work. Where those laws are ignored, problems happen. And we're living in what the Bible calls the last days. I'm firmly convinced of that. And we see the breakdown of God's law. And the doctrine, if you will, of evolution, which is an agnostic or atheistic doctrine, is contributing to that. So what do we see going on in the world today? Well, we see moral standards just being thrown out the window. People will say, well, if there's no God, why can't I do whatever makes me feel good? That's the new moral standard.
Yeah, whatever is best for me.
Yeah, right. Very selfish, very self-centered. And so with moral standards being relaxed today, we see the growth in venereal diseases, broken hearts, broken marriages, violent reactions due to jealousy and unfaithfulness. This is all a fruitage of that philosophy, of that thinking. The lack of respect for others, the mistreatment of others. Have you noticed in the social scene today how antagonistic people are, how young people have no respect for their elders?
I know.
Snapping at one another, you know, complete strangers. There is no guidance, no love for one another, and that's what God's law specifies. Abortion. Well, I don't want to say too much in that because that opens up a whole other can of worms.
Yeah, we'll talk about that by itself another time.
Yeah.
But, David, we're running shy on time. I'm going to cut you off here. There's several other things: mercy killings, lawlessness, governmental abuse, abandonment of personal responsibility. Again, CQ Rewind, the full edition, has all of this.
Jonathan, at ChristianQuestions.net.
At ChristianQuestions.net. Thanks. Jonathan, one scripture here that David talked about being in the end times. And folks, listen to this scripture because it fits so well with the content of what we've just been talking about.
But realize this, that in the last days, difficult times will come, for men will be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, arrogant, revilers, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, unholy, unloving, irreconcilable, malicious. My tongue is tied. Without self-control, brutal, haters of good, treacherous, reckless, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, holding to the form of godliness, although they have denied its power, avoid such men as these.
And that's an awful list, David, but it's really describing what happens in a godless environment. And evolution is godless.
Yeah, but you know, almost by definition, and most evolutionists will say that.
Science is not godless. Evolutionary theory is godless. Let's understand, there's a difference between the two. Accept the science, throw out the religious fervor.
Yes, that's right. You know, I am a Christian, I'm a follower of Christ, but a lot of what I believe regarding creationism doesn't come from the scriptures, but comes from science. The science that I've seen, the evidence of science that I've seen, that shows the beautiful designs and the coordinated designs and all the things we've talked about that mandate a conclusion for creation.
So, and I think that is one of the most important points here, is that, you know, for your personal perspective, you have learned creation by the study of science, and then you go back to the scriptures and you say how beautifully that fits with the scriptural concept. The Bible is not supposed to be a scientific textbook, but it relates us, it shows us how science fits into its principles. David, we have less than a minute. Wrap us up.
Well, there's so many things we would like to say. I mean, we had quotes from other evolutionists that back up what we've been saying about the social implications. Here's the bottom line. Neo-Darwinian theory is a materialist theory. It is a theory that is based upon reinterpretation of evidence to a philosophy and a conclusion that evolutionists already have, that God didn't exist, wasn't responsible, therefore evolution has to be true.
And that God cannot possibly exist.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, right. Rule out that prima facie. And it has implications for social implications for us all.
David, thanks so much for being with us this morning. This has been incredibly valuable and incredibly enlightening. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Folks, listen, this has been a whirlwind tour of an understanding, and hopefully light bulbs are going off in your head saying, man, the greatness of God is shown through science and not just pieces, and we're not cherry-picking science. We're looking at science as a body saying it proves the existence of the Creator. Psalm 104:24, O Lord, how many are your works in wisdom? You have made them all. For Jonathan and Rick and our special guest David Stein, we hope you've enjoyed being with us this morning. We loved being with you. Please go to Facebook, leave your comments there. We'll be back again next week with another subject. But till then, God did create. We did not evolve. We'll be back next week. Think about it.